You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hello, perfectly pumped pub problem punchers. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 251, and of course, I'm your humble host, Karen, and along with me are our crazily crafty a cranial cream puffs.
I'm Colin.
And I'm Chris.
All right. I just want to start today's show with a quick shout out to Leslie, who now lives in Seattle, who we're recording now at like 9:30 p.m., 6 hours ago, who recognized me at the airport at SFO.
Yes.
I was at San Francisco for work, for a work trip, and we were on the same flight back to Seattle. My husband FaceTimed me at the airport showing me the dog sleeping. And then he says, "Hey, I gotta go." And I'm like, "You called me."
I got many more important things to do right now. I mean, I gotta go back to watching the dog sleep.
I hung up the phone. I was like, "Well, that was weird." And the person across from me was like, "Are you Karen?" And I go, "Yeah." And then she said that she listens to Good Job Brain and recognized my voice from that terribly embarrassing interaction on the phone with my husband.
Leslie, I am impressed. Like, I mean, I would have to be 600% sure that I know the person. I mean, like, on just on that short of a sample, I mean, and you know, yeah, we're, you know, there was not a video production that we do here.
Even if it's like, yeah, a famous person, I'm, yeah, not even, I would, like, sure. I would.
We were at a restaurant once. We were kids, and like literally, like Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was there, and there was like this woman was like, "Do you think that's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar?" It's like, yes, yes, it's Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. It is Kareem. Yeah,
that's so funny. My husband also spotted Kareem Abdul-Jabbar once.
Well, I guess he's easy to spot.
Yeah,
tall, that's, man, true.
Tall man.
Even in a crowd.
Oh, man. So, yeah, thank you. Thank you, Leslie. That was such a fun, fun interaction. And Colin, we need a update on your dice game, on your game.
I have
that you
been
just launched.
So delighted. I did. I just launched a dice and cards game called Bare Bones. I have been absolutely delighted how many Good Job Brain listeners have gone to our site, given us their hard-earned money, bought our game. We've been packing them up, shipping them out. It's really surreal, I have to say, like, after working on this thing for so long, to, you know, bring it into the world and hold it in your hands. It's like having, you know, 500 little cardboard boxes of babies. Well, that's a bad analogy, I guess, but the, wow, game is going great. Thank you to everybody who has bought the game. If any of you would like to check the game out, see if you like it, take a look at it, you can go to barebonesgame.com. No S on the end there. Game.
Code, importantly. Use the code.
I'm so bad at promoting. The code, Good Job Brain. One
I'm
word.
I'm very well trained now after 10 years.
Use the promo code, $5 off if you use the code Good Job Brain. By the time this episode airs, boxes will already be in people's homes, on their shelves, hopefully playing with their families.
Cool. All right. Well, without further ado, let's jump. Ado. Adieu. Jump.
Ado. It's not adieu. It's, yeah, it's not in the French. Yeah.
Further ado.
It's ado. It's okay. Like without further doings. Yeah, 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 yeah.
You know, it's like that. There's the super cut of Alex Trebek being Canadian. He, you know, with French words, he's very, very respectful, right, of the French pronunciation. So it's like a super cut of him saying genre. We say genre. The genre. Yeah. This genre.
It's one syllable when he does it. I mean, that's the beautiful genre. It's incredible.
All right, pop quiz, hot shot, Trivial Pursuit, normal version, Blue Wedge for geography. I got a random card. You guys have your barnyard buzzers. Let's answer some questions. Blue Wedge for geography. Which is the only U.S. state capital city with not a single McDonald's fast food joint?
Oh, my gosh.
The only U.S. state capital city.
So not only do you have to know the state,
right, and yeah, let's just go the other direction. There's gotta be a McDonald's in Sacramento, Chris, right? All right, so that's one down.
I think so. Yeah, 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 good, good, good. Okay, okay. Them off. How, what if it was Anchorage, Alaska.
Ooh.
I see, Rich, you're going like, yeah, like Alaska.
I don't think that's the capital.
That's not the capital.
Isn't it Juneau, I'm pretty sure.
Juneau.
It's one syllable as Alex Trebek says it. Yeah.
It is not. It's contiguous.
Okay. Mm. All right.
Okay. As you guys are thinking, I'm quickly doing really quick research to see if there's a reason.
For a notable reason, or is it just a random
thing? That's the
fact.
Thing. It's like, is it just a whole thing where they just don't like McDonald's?
Okay. This city also doesn't have a Burger King. In terms of population, 7,500 people. They tend to favor local businesses over large chains.
Uh-huh.
It is on the East Coast.
Before you throw those clues out, I was going to say Montpelier, Vermont. But
yes!
Yeah. Okay.
What?
Okay.
How?
Wow.
I mean, I can see local favoring local stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. I didn't know Montpelier was that small. Did you say 7,500 people?
100. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Pink wedge for pop culture. Which bridesmaid who was upstaged in the film by Rose Byrne was herself a serial one-upper on SNL? It's a circuitous way to say who was in the movie Bridesmaids.
Who was in the movie
Rose
Bridesmaids?
Byrne.
Right.
Goodness. Okay.
Okay. Is it Kristen Wiig?
It is Kristen Wiig.
Okay.
Kristen
all right. Wiig.
What does that mean? Serial one upper. I don't understand what they mean by that.
This like, is too clever.
Yeah. It's like
Because her character, right, with the embellishing character, right?
Yes, Penelope. As the annoying Penelope, she invented kayaks and made a summer home on Jupiter.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yellow Wedge. Which London department store was started by an American retailer in 1909? I can name two, and it's one.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to guess one. Yeah,
right.
Harrods.
No, the other
one. The other one.
Colin.
Is that Fortnum & Mason?
No.
Mm.
I guess there's a third one. Selfridge.
Okay. I definitely heard of them. Definitely.
Yeah. Selfridges.
Okay. Founded by an American.
Sorry, Selfridges. It's multiple of them. many ridges. It's like a Ruffles chip. Purple Wedge. Which novel by Emma Donoghue, narrated by 5-year-old boy, was made into a movie that snagged the lead actress an Oscar? That makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
No, I have no idea.
Colin.
It's just The Room, right?
What's the title of this movie?
Just Room?
It's just not The Room, right?
Yeah, Room. It's just Room. Sorry, yes. Definitely not to be confused with The Room. Mm-hmm. No, just
Room. Brie Larson.
Yeah, right.
Here we go. Green Wedge for science. How many people does it take to drive an autonomous vehicle? That was a trick. Chris, please.
Zero.
It is zero. Flavor text here, also known as self-driving cars. Autonomous cars operate without a driver. Last question on this card. Orange Wedge, Sports and Leisure, headquartered in Beaverton, Oregon. Mm. Let's just throw in some guesses now. Headquartered in Beaverton, Oregon.
Nike Corporation.
Which athletic company was once known as Blue Ribbon Sports? Founded in 1964, they changed their name to Nike in 1971. All right, let's do another card. Pop culture 2, pop 2 culture, whatever it is. This one I just scanned and it looked hard. That's why I feel like doing this card might be fun. Okay, Blue Wedge for TV. What series follows the exploits of Max Guevara in a bleak Seattle after an electromagnetic pulse fried most of North America's electronics? I'll say that again. What series, so TV series, follows the exploits of Max Guevara in a bleak Seattle after an electromagnetic pulse fried most of North America's electronics?
Man, this sounds
I don't know.
Vaguely familiar. I don't know.
Oh, okay. The answer is Dark Angel. Isn't that Jessica Alba?
Was that the one? Right. Okay. And that was like produced by like James Cameron, right? Is that the one? But I don't know. She was the star of that show.
I know. Right? Maybe her name is Max.
Or maybe her name is Max. That's right.
It is. Her name is Max.
Ah, there we go. Okay. There's no way a woman could be named Max, Karen. It's not possible. Okay.
Pink wedge for Fed. How many years is a phone number on the U.S. Do Not Call registry off limits to telemarketers?
Huh.
I didn't even know this was this was available. Colin.
7.
Lower, Chris. Hazard a guess.
5.
5. It is 5. How many years? Yes. I don't know if it's currently 5, but okay. Yellow wedge for Buzz. What world leader, according to longtime mistress Parasula Lampsos, claimed his favorite Sinatra tune was Strangers in the Night?
Wow.
What? One more time? What, okay. Sorry.
What world leader?
World leader. Okay. Wow. All right.
According to his longtime mistress Parasula Lampsos, claimed his favorite Sinatra tune was Strangers in the Night. I'll tell you, before I saw the answer,
my guess
was Marcos.
Ferdinand Marcos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Ferdinand Marcos, because, you know, as we talked about, singing Sinatra in the Philippines in karaoke is like a big...
Good guess.
Oh. A big thing.
Yeah.
Good guess. Good guess.
But it is not. Strangers in the Night. Okay, go for it.
Saddam Hussein.
Yes, you are
cool. No way.
Wow.
Come on.
Da, da, wow. Da, da, da.
Thought I was joking. Okay, all right.
Good job, brain. Music. What country star has been backed by the Nash Ramblers, Spy Boy, and the Hot Band? I feel like Chris would actually know this.
Yeah.
Seeing this answer.
What?
Country.
It is a woman.
Okay. Reba McEntire.
It is Emmylou Harris. Harris. Okay. Emmylou Harris. Emmy.
Okay.
Why can't I say that? Emmylou.
Emmylou.
Emmylou. Emmylou. Emmylou. Emmylou. Okay. Green wedge for movies. What actor plays Frank Whitaker, who leaves his wife for the other man in Far From Heaven? Wow. What a deep cut. Okay. What actor plays Frank Whitaker, who leaves his wife for the other man in Far From Heaven? A film. Wow. Damn.
I'm going to say do not know.
Okay.
I don't know if I know this one.
I think Julianne Moore is the wife, and Dennis Quaid is the husband. It is Julianne Moore. Wow.
Hey.
Wow, good job.
Last question. Sports and games. How many consecutive Tour de France did Lance Armstrong win?
Ooh.
Consecutive.
I'll let Colin take a stab at this one.
Yeah.
It was a lot, man. Was it 6?
7.
Oh,
7.
Wow.
All right. Good job, brains. Wow. That was it. That was, you know, for pop culture, that was actually a really hard card. All right.
Well, folks, it's our spring season. We are in the full flower of spring, and you know what that means.
Allergies.
Yay. What I was going to say is that means that, you know, generally what follows spring is summer. And so that kind of got me thinking of, like, you know, usually, right? And so I was like, oh, why don't we talk about this upcoming summer that we're going to have? Let's have a little episode about summer.
Summer is now so different.
Yeah.
Now as a parent.
Yeah.
Right. Now it's not like, oh, summer vacation. Yay. It's like, oh God, summer vacation. They're going to be in the house. What are we going to do with these people? Yeah. I have to work. Yeah.
So this week, you guys, just like DJ Jazzy Jeff says, it's summertime.
So I did something recently that I have not done in a really long time, which is I went to the movies.
I bet I can guess what movie you watched.
I bet you can guess what movie I watched. What did I see in the theaters, Karen?
The
Super Mario Brothers movie. Correct. Yes. Took the oldest child to the theaters for the first time in, like, you know, 3 years. 3 years. Two of the movies to see the Super Mario Brothers movie. And it was great. We had fun. He pronounced it it's his favorite movie ever. I'm like, that's recency bias.
Was it his first time at in a theater?
You know, his first time at a theater was, we saw right before everything closed, we saw Onward, the Pixar movie.
Oh,
Onward,
yeah. Oh, I love the Onward. Wow.
It was great.
Chris Pratt, double feature.
It was. It's exactly. So the only actor he's ever seen in a theater is Chris Pratt. And got me thinking about, while we're doing the summer episode, I shoot something about like summer blockbusters. Because, you know, Super Mario Brothers movie was huge. It's the biggest movie of the year so far. Mm-hmm. It's going to make a ton of money. It could be the biggest movie of the year, period. Who knows? It's doing incredibly well. So it got me thinking about the classic, the summer blockbuster. And so I got myself a list of the biggest, the number one summer blockbusters of every year, you know, going back to the 70s, and constructed a little quiz around them.
All right.
So it's just pretty straightforward. I'm going to tell you about some trivia about a film that was a summer blockbuster, and you just have to guess, you know, what movie I'm talking about.
Are the constraints just that this movie was released in the summer?
It was released in the summer, and of the year that it came out, it was the biggest of the summer.
Okay.
Yep. So we'll get you started. Get those barnyard buzzers ready to go, because here it comes. Question number one, summer blockbuster trivia. All right. Question one. When composer John Williams originally played this film's theme song for director Steven Spielberg, Spielberg laughed and said, "That's funny, John, really, but what did you really have in mind?"
Huh.
Colin.
It must be Jaws.
It is Jaws. Oh. Very good. It's like, this is the theme. This is the main theme of their movie. When I was in second grade, so this must have been 1988, they did like reading groups in second grade where they assessed all the kids' reading levels. And then they kind of had one group of kids come in, you know, and they like split off from the class, like do reading with the teacher. Yeah. And so the first day they did this, they split off the one group. And they did a thing where they had the kids name their reading group. And so
always a hazard.
And so I'm in the third group. The third group sits down and we find out that the first group of kids had come in and they had named their reading group Jaws. And the second group of kids had come in and named their reading group Jaws 2. And thus, we were sort of peer pressured by one kid into naming our group Jaws the Revenge, which of course was the recent film that had come out, I think, the last year. Now, none of these kids should have seen this movie, not for all the, you know, but it's like everybody knew all those movies, like whether or not you had seen it. So yes, our reading group is called Jaws Revenge.
Funny you said that, because my parents took me to the third movie. Like,
really?
Worst nightmare, being in an aquarium and a shark comes and attacks the glass tank and pokes through the glass. Every time I'm in an aquarium, that's like all I think.
You're like, not sitting in the front row. No.
Oh my gosh. No, well, splash, I'm glad zone. I didn't actually see the film. Jaws. The first summer blockbuster. Yep.
Yes.
Very, very well known as the first time there was a summer blockbuster movie that was Jaws. Question two, 2014, jumping ahead in time a little bit, 2014's biggest summer blockbuster featured, among others, John C. Reilly, Glenn Close, and Benicio Del Toro.
Okay.
Oh. Karen.
It's another Chris Pratt. Is it Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yes, it is Guardians of the Galaxy.
Wow, yeah. That's a good
featured
question.
Among others.
Among yes, others,
very
nice.
Well known, yes.
Well phrased.
Yeah.
The cameos, yeah.
All right, question three. The biggest summer blockbuster of 2000 was this sequel, which reintroduced its main character by showing him doing a barehanded free solo climb up a massive cliff in the Utah desert.
Oh, all right. So,
Colin,
Mission Impossible 2.
Okay. Not trying to trick you.
All right. Okay.
Yes. Mission Impossible 2, famously by Tom Cruise doing the stunt himself.
Really?
Oh yeah.
I know he does a lot of stunts himself, but like that's free climbing is hard.
Yeah.
And that was probably done on helicopter, like not drones yet.
I believe so. Yeah. And he had a wire harness on him that they kind of digitally removed, but he was still doing it.
Still doing it.
Well, yeah. Nobody was helping him. Yeah. It is pretty wild to watch it. All right. Question. How about question four? Question four, the original treatment for this summer blockbuster was titled Journal of the Wills.
Ah. Colin. Star Wars.
Star Wars. Yeah, the treatment that George Lucas sat down originally and started writing out was titled Journal of the Wills. Here's the first sentence, by the way, from the Journal of the Wills treatment that he wrote. You ready? Yeah. Dear Will. No, W-H-I-L-L-S. All right, here it is. Ready? This is the story of Mace Windu, a revered Jedi Bendu of Ofuchi, as related to us by C.J. Thorpe, Padawan learner to the famed Jedi.
Mace Windu.
Mace Windu. Mace Windu. Yep. And the hero of this film was C.J. Thorpe.
Yes.
That was the original name, C.J. Thorpe. Hilariously, the C actually stood for Chewy.
Ah,
yeah. Chewy J. Thorpe.
Chewy J. I believe it was the J may have been a junior also.
Okay.
Chewy Thorpe, space accountant.
I'm glad in a galaxy far away, they still honor the junior, senior, same name rule. Yes.
Yeah. And so, you know, George Lucas went and got that treatment out when he started writing Phantom Menace. He went and like reread the treatment. And so obviously this, he saw Mace Windu and, you know, kind of brought that in.
I love that
Mace much more Windu Star Wars name, Mace Windu.
Kicking around in his head for 35
decades.
Years.
Yeah. Decades. Like, I can't believe I forgot to use Mace Windu.
Yeah.
Question five. This summer blockbuster about an adorable 5-year-old boy debuted on June 6th, 1976. That's summer blockbuster. That's 6676, by the way. Karen.
Is it The Omen?
It's The Omen.
Yeah. It's The Omen. Cute. Nice. Oh, 6676.
Nice. That was the day they did previews for it in the UK. And as when the audiences were in the theater in the UK, they saw the movie. And as they're in the theater watching it, they were putting up more posters outside the showroom, basically, that read, "Today is the sixth day of the sixth month of 1976. You have been warned." Because they didn't say, like, oh, it's on 6676 to get people in.
Oh.
They sort of figured people would not notice that. And then then they hit it with them as they left.
Yeah, give you something to say up at night about when you get home.
Exactly. Question six. In this summer blockbuster, acclaimed Australian actor Jeffrey Rush played a pelican named Nigel.
Oh, man. Pelican.
Karen.
It's Finding Nemo.
It's Finding Nemo.
Yeah.
Oh.
There you go.
Oh.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It wasn't Jeffrey Rush dressed up like a bird.
It was not Jeffrey Rush dressed up like a pelican.
Yep. I definitely cottoned that it was probably like a CG movie, but yeah.
Question seven. The biggest summer blockbuster of 1978 was Grease. This is the musical featuring such songs as Grease. Hopelessly, Grease, Hopelessly Devoted to You. Summer Nights and You're the One That I Want. Okay. Grease, Hopelessly Devoted to You, Summer Nights, You're the One That I Want. Of those four songs, only one of them actually appeared in the Broadway musical on which the movie Grease was based.
Oh.
Wait, say the songs again.
Grease, Hopelessly Devoted to You, Summer Nights, You're the One That I Want.
Only one of them.
Only one of those four famous Grease songs was actually in the musical.
Okay. Let's work this out. So, Colin,
work it out.
I feel like it's not going to be Grease.
Grease, because that's like the pop song.
It's just so poppy and cinematic. Yeah, that's what I feel like. Okay, all right.
Hopelessly Devoted to You was like a big pop hit as well. I mean, that was like such a Olivia Newton-John song. Summer Nights is such a, like, here, introduce the characters.
Yeah,
kind of
let's go Summer Nights. Let's go Summer Nights.
Okay, let's do Summer Nights.
You got it. You figured it out. Woo! Yeah. Summer Good Nights, job, you're absolutely right. Summer Nights does really set up a lot and put the plot in motion. But yeah, you're the one that I want, the big ending. You know, that was that was added for the movie, hopelessly devoted to you. I think, Karen, you're right on the money. That was added as, you know, Olivia Newton-John's big single, you know, like single for the movie. And then Grease, of course, was the intro song by Frankie Valli, which, you know, had nothing to do with the plot. Wasn't even in the
So how did the Broadway musical end? It didn't end with that.
There's a song called All Shook Up, which is very kind of similar-ish to You're the One That I Want, but it's not nearly as infectious.
Okay.
Yeah. Badly. The Broadway musical ended badly. It's a weird musical. It's much less, there's much more of a plot and a through line kind of, you know, going through the movie. That's what they kind of narrowed it down, you know what I mean, to the Danny Sandy story, whereas in the Broadway musical is very sort of a pastiche. It's like lots and lots of things happening and lots of people getting their own solos and things like that.
Got it.
Anyway, Grease, biggest hit of biggest summer blockbuster of 78. Question eight. Okay. Big summer blockbuster from the 90s. You probably have seen it. You've probably heard of it. You've definitely heard of it. You've probably seen it. But can you name it based on the names of its three main characters?
Ooh, okay. Okay.
Those names are, maybe you can, maybe you can, I don't know. Molly Jensen, Sam Wheat, and Oda Mae Brown.
Oh.
Karen.
That is Ghost.
That is Ghost. That is definitely Ghost.
It was not until you got to Oda Mae Brown. Strong performances.
So yeah, Oda Mae Brown. Oh my God.
Okay, so got the last question for you folks. It's the last question. Speaking of, we're going to stay on Ghosts. Let's talk about 1984's biggest summer blockbuster, Ghostbusters. All right. Piece of trivia that I learned while I was making this quiz. Ghostbusters, the likeness and personality of the ghost character Slimer were actually a deliberate homage to this Saturday Night Live comedian.
Oh.
Karen.
It's got to be John Belushi. Yeah,
it is John Belushi.
Really? Animal House. John Belushi kind of.
So basically Slimer was based on, you know, John Belushi had passed away in 1982. So basically, you know, just before they were making this film, very close with Dan Aykroyd and Harold Ramis, right? So, I mean, they basically based Slimer's look and his sort of gluttonous personality on John Belushi and his character Bluto from Animal House.
Whoa, really? You know? Wow.
Right. Yep. Go back, take a second look at Slimer and his face, and there's a little John Belushi in there, basically.
Wow.
I'm gonna have to watch that one with my daughter. She maybe is getting old enough that she might appreciate it. It's not super scary.
The librarian scene is so scary.
You know what? She's kind of a rock. She likes to be scared. She's a kid who likes a little bit of thrill. Yeah, if you get through that, just that kind of that first sort of jump scare at the beginning, it's not that frightening. All right, I'm gonna watch for the Belushiness of the Belushiness of Slimer, a memoir by Colin Belushosity. Colton. Yeah.
Guys, if you were to name a drink of the summer, like a summertime drink, what would it be?
Lemonade.
100%. Lemonade. Yes. Do you actually drink lemonade during the summer?
When I was a kid, for sure, I did more.
Mm-hmm. Did you make it at home or do you order it? Like, do you drink it out of a can?
I remember making lemonade at home with my dad, literally one time. We had actually a lemon tree on our property. Like
not from concentrate
out in the alley, and not the alley, but like on the side of the house, and it, you know, it didn't put out really robust lemons, but it was one of those things. One summer it was like super hot, and like I was there and my dad was there and one of his friends was over. One of us just said, kind of casually joking, like, oh, we should make some lemonade, it's really hot. And my dad's friend is like, let's make some lemonade. So my dad's like, yeah, let's make some lemonade. So we pulled the lemons off and went inside and squeezed them up and add the sugar, you know, a little back in the, and like it was just one of those things, like, this is not worth the effort. Like even at 8 years old, I was like, I was so much more comfortable 20 minutes ago than I was now, even with this.
Right. I'm sweating. I had to go pick lemons. And then I just made the lemonade and it's not even cold, you know.
Yeah.
A couple episodes ago in our Good Morning Brain episode, which was all about morning stuff, it blew my own mind and hopefully everybody else's minds when I looked into Why do we drink orange juice in the morning?
Mm-hmm.
Because you think it has vitamin C. It's healthy for you. It's an ancient tradition. You know, like, turns out it was an advertising ploy.
Right.
Orange got the morning slot and lemons got the afternoon lunchtime slot. I've always had a question when I came to America, because I didn't understand it. I just made a reasoning for it in my head. Is the phenomenon of pink lemonade.
Oh.
What is the difference between pink lemonade and normal lemonade?
Mm.
For people who are outside the US, I don't know if you guys have pink lemonade as well, but it is pink lemonade.
Right. I mean,
is it the same? Is it, how right. is it different? What do you think is the difference?
As a kid, I was always baffled by this. As a kid, like, in my head, I think I just decided that, like, pink lemonade was, I don't know, like, tartar tangy or something. But, you know, I just convinced myself of whatever I needed. Yeah, I can never get a straight answer from the grown-ups, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah, I don't know if it has a different flavor.
Because you see it in color. Candies, too, right? You have pink lemonade flavor, and there's lemon flavor. Like, what's the difference?
Yep.
In my head, I thought it was the species of lemon pink in flesh, like ruby grapefruit or blood orange. And it's just a special type of lemon that maybe has an extra colorant in the fruit. A lot of people think there's like berry or cranberry or some sort of like other juice added to it. There is zero difference. It literally is just colored pink.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
There are two competing origin stories here.
Oh.
Both stem from the circus. One is a circus worker was making a batch of lemonade and dropped a cinnamon hard candy.
All right, false. Already false. Like any of the origin stories where it's like, false. But yeah, no, like I don't believe it. Right. Yeah.
The other story is a little bit more colorful, colorful and slash gross. A circus worker who was making a big batch of lemonade, he ran out of water. It was too popular. It was too hot outside. He needed to make more lemonade. So what did he do? He took a tub of water that was used to rinse the circus horse rider's tights. So hold on. Let me rewind.
Okay.
At the circus, there are people who ride horses or do tricks on you know, bareback riding.
Mm-hmm.
This lady needed to rinse her tights, and her tights were bright red. Mm. And so she's washing her tights in this laundry water, which then Mr. Lemonade used that water to make his lemonade, which is why the lemonade's pink, because the water was red from the dye from this person's tights after she wore them.
These are the two best stories.
Yeah. It's like,
at the risk of contradicting myself here, I'm going to have to say, of those two stories, I think the hard candy dropped in is more plausible.
And the other thing I wanted to share, you know, when we think of lemonade, we think of like kids selling lemonade, the lemonade stand on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
And it has become the symbol for entrepreneurship, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Little kids understand how money works, start a business, open a lemonade stand. Like, I don't know any other cultures that have that lemonade stand symbol. This is such a uniquely American thing. And it links to one person. And this person, his name is Edward Bach. And he's an immigrant from the Netherlands. Came with his family to America, you know, was pretty poor, was definitely a hustler. And he eventually became a big time kind of editor for the Ladies' Home Journal. So that's kind of his big claim to fame. After he found success, he had an autobiography published, and that actually won a Pulitzer Award. And so a lot of people are reading this highly acclaimed book. When he was a kid, he sold lemonade on the streets. Huh. And it was this that propelled this narrative.
So it is sort of uniquely American in its origins.
Yeah, the American dream. I'm so curious if any international listeners, if there is something like a lemonade stand equivalent in your culture or in your country. Did you guys sell lemonade when you were kids?
Again, it's something I did one time. I did my friend Justin, the friend who I created Bare Bones the game with.
No way! You guys sold lemonade together?
We did once when we were kids. It was the middle of summer, and again we were just bored at like it's hot. Hey, it's like, should we do a lemonade stand? Because we had seen it again just in countless TV shows, movies, comics, magazines. I guess we must have ridden our bikes to the store.
Did you guys buy like fresh lemons or like?
No, I mean, we bought, it's so stupid. We just bought like lemonade off the shelf.
Oh, like pre-made?
Yeah, we just bought like, so like this was our business model was like, all right, well, our business model is no one really cares if it's homemade, right? People just want lemonade. Like we're just about satisfying the customer. Between the two of us, we couldn't have had more than like $5 or $6. So we bought some lemonade, took it back. We iced it down and like we got our own cups. We definitely supplied our own cups and we built a little stand and set up and we sold cups of our lemonade with ice for, I don't know, like a quarter. And like we made money. We made a profit. And we're like,
oh, it actually worked.
It worked.
I mean,
it worked. Incredible. We set up like right on the corner near like the city park, just a couple blocks from our house, and it worked.
So you had location, you had that foot traffic, you know, you were in the right place for it. That's amazing. And now you guys are still trying to get a business going. So
I promise we did not buy this game at the store and then sell it to you. We created from scratch. We've advanced a lot in the decades since then. Mm-hmm.
Maybe I did lemonade at some point, but it was probably in conjunction with us having a yard sale or selling at a flea market.
That's smart.
Because I did that because I absolutely, I would always be selling stuff at the yard sales and flea markets, old toys and things like that.
Wait, as a kid?
Yeah. Then I graduated to, I was buying and selling video games. Because we would buy like Atari games and stuff like that.
Whoa!
For like, we'd buy them for like $5 for like somebody's entire Atari and all their stuff. But then we'd sell games for like a dollar or two each at the flea markets and stuff.
Who's
like
we?
That. My brother and I.
Wow. Hustle kids.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, totally. Well, our parents were selling at the yard sales and flea markets as well. So we were all doing it all together. Yeah.
Oh, how cute. Oh, that's very, very cute.
That really is. Yeah.
Wasn't so cute when we bought some ladies video games from over one end of the flea market, marked them up and put them on her table, and she came by. The look on her face did not suggest that we were adorable, I'll tell you that.
All right, let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pile-ups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
You're listening to Good Job Brain. Smooth puzzles, smart trivia. Good Job Brain.
Hey, this week, it's getting hot. It's almost summertime. We're talking summer. Colin, what's next?
What smells come to mind when you guys think of summer? When you just close your eyes and I just summer. What are some of the smells?
This is going to be another one of those Colin quizzes with a title. That's like, the title of my quiz is, anybody smell that?
Furiously taking notes over here. Anybody smell
What's that smell? Yeah.
What smells come to mind in the sense? Yeah, smell of
summer smell.
Coconut sunscreen.
Lemonade stands. Oh, I like coconut. Okay.
Beach.
Beach.
Salty water.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Smell of mown grass.
Swimming pool. Beachy. Chlorine. Yeah.
Karen, you and I are locked in because like you've named like the two that are like for me my top two. Like just okay. I close my eyes. It's chlorine and sunblock. You know, just that
coconut.
It doesn't have to be coconut, but there's just that aroma of sunscreen and the chlorine, just like a swimming pool. Just like I can just hear it. I can feel it. I close my eyes. And that to me is just the smell of summer, the feel of summer. I didn't even have a swimming pool. We didn't have a residential pool at my house. But I did, however, grow up in Los Angeles, as you both know, which is practically the land of the swimming pool. Just a dizzying number of swimming pools in LA. I didn't have one, but my next door neighbor had a pool. The family across the street had a pool. My best friend down the block had a pool, as did his neighbors, as did that city park that I told you we set up to sell lemonade two blocks away. There was a pool there. There are a lot of swimming pools in LA. And there was something that I always liked. I'm going to get a little poetic here for a moment. There's something I always liked flying into or out of LA. I don't know if any of the listeners had this experience or you guys too. You look down and you see all this little swimming pools in LA. Just these little, just the flecks of blue and blue green. And you're like, there's so many of them. And it's gorgeous in a way.
Like little blue beans.
Several years ago, I was reading an article in the LA Times. Wait,
what's the title of your segment? We're still waiting.
I'm just about to get there. Like
Oh, really? Oh, okay.
That was all the cold.
Okay. Okay.
Several years ago, I was reading an article in the LA Times, or probably more accurately on the LA Times website, since I don't live in LA anymore. And this article, it was talking about an artist and a researcher named Benedict Gross. And it was talking about how he had the exact same thought that I have had many times on the airplane, which is, I wonder how many swimming pools there are in LA.
Oh.
The name of my segment is, how many swimming pools are there in LA? But so I know this almost feels like one of those lateral thinking challenges, right? Or like the Google interview question.
A jelly bean.
Right, yeah.
I'm not so interested in, are you giving me the correct answer, as I am, and how would you go about solving this problem? So I'll throw it to you guys here as a little fun little exercise. How would you go about counting, estimating, arriving at the number of swimming pools in LA? Where would you start?
I mean, can we do research?
Okay.
You probably have to have a permit to put in a swimming pool if it's like an in-ground swimming pool. Great. So I'm guessing you could go to the government and figure out like maybe if they might be able to give you like a percentage, or if you were to take, you know, a sampling of houses to find out which ones had put in pools, you know, permit wise, and then figure out number of houses and figure out your percentage, and you can kind of estimate it that way.
That's really good thinking. That was the author of the article talked about, you know, that is in fact one way that Benedict Gross, and he ended up partnering with another sort of postgraduate student named Joseph Lee. And so they kind of had that thought too. Well, permits, maybe look at the number of permits. Now, the problem is LA is, you know, not the oldest city in the country, but it's an old city and they've had swimming pools there for a long time, some of which predate the modern permitting system, some of which were probably never permitted at all. Some of those records may not exist. It may be totally spotty. Maybe you could look at, you know, water bills, right? I mean, you got a swimming pool. Maybe you go talk to pool suppliers, pool cleaners, right? You do a survey and maybe you kind of just sort of do a statistical approximation.
But why not? Why is it the jelly bean approach, where if you're flying down and you're looking down and you map out how big greater LA is and you have an area view, do a little section of an aerial view, like from an airplane, and be like, okay, out of this block, which has 10 houses, 8 of them have swimming pools, and you kind of multiply that, the jelly bean
That's a great, exactly, a great statistical approach method there, Karen. So they kind of ended up sort of on that vein. In fact, they went you one better, and they figured, well, why not just take a big picture from above and count them up? Sort of audaciously.
Oh, really?
So they decided, we're going to count from above using photography every pool in the LA basin, the greater LA area. So yeah.
Sure.
So here's what they did is they started by getting two sets of satellite photos, right? I mean, they didn't actually go up in a helicopter and take these pictures themselves, but they got two sets of satellite photos from the government, from the National Agriculture Imagery Program. And they were two overlaid photos. One was a true color composite photo. Okay. And then the other was, I'm sure you guys have seen these in science reporting or space or agriculture, what they call a false color photograph, right?
No.
So, you know, a false color photograph is often used to highlight or accentuate a particular feature of a piece of terrain or something. So, you know, the color is not real, but it helps you sort of visualize how much of something is or what the contrast is between something. So now, again, these are, you know, artists, researchers, you know, students, maybe you got to work on a budget here. They sent them off to a company in India that specialized in photoshopping elements out of their backgrounds to be comped against white backgrounds for things like catalogs or, you know, photo shoots things like that. Right.
Cillo.
So trained in pulling things out of the background. Right. So they paid $300 and got this massive set of photos here outlined. They went through it and they outlined every pool, every swimming pool. They went through and outlined them, pulled them against the background. They reviewed the company's work manually, just to kind of double check. Then they sent these results. They paid another $350 on Amazon, some Mechanical Turk. I know you guys are probably pretty aware of that. To basically just a crowdsourcing platform to pay people very small token amounts of money to verify this original team's work of finding, you missed a pool, or this isn't a pool, this is just a blue shed, cleaned it up. Again, grossly manually checked this themselves. Sounds exhausting. And of course, they're pricing their own labor at zero. They got their best estimate based on every pool, at least visible from above in the LA basin. They counted 43,123 swimming pools. It's hard to envision that number. So they put together sort of the grand output of this project was a book, a multi-volume set called The Big Atlas of LA Pools. And there is one copy of this 74 volume, 6,000 page edition that contains all of their findings. They overlaid on top of this a lot of really interesting demographic and statistical breakdowns of everything from income level. No surprise, it turns out that of the various cities, Beverly Hills had the highest per capita swimming pools in the region.
Question. Let's say I live in a house that has a pool in LA. Would I see my pool in this book?
If they did it correctly, then yes. And they would even be able to cross-reference it with your address or, you know, I mean, it's publicly accessible data. As they got further and further into doing this project, they both got a little unnerved by how much data was publicly available to them to sort of correlate all laid up on top of each other. Like once you start layering income and voting patterns, and it really paints a very rich picture of the populations around Greater
Los
Angeles.
And what's my privacy? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what's my privacy? Yeah. So maybe it is better there's just, you know, one copy of this sitting in one of their houses somewhere. But it started literally with him on an airplane flying into LA, looking at like, oh my gosh, I wonder how many pools there are out there. So now, just as a little button on this segment here, I have a few little bit of trivia nuggets questions for you guys here, but just to close up this article. Oh. This article in the LA Times from 2013, I swear, this article was written by reporter Bob Poole.
Robert.
Yeah, Robert. So I got three trivia questions here for you guys about swimming pools that I just came across in some form or another in the course of my research here. So here we go. Let's make this a write-down quiz here. Give the pen and paper a chance to shine. Question one. What Western U.S. city has the highest per capita rate of residential pool ownership in the country? It is not LA. It is not LA. LA has more pools overall, but yeah, this city, according to numbers I found in Pool Magazine, yes, this city, 32.7% of the residents of this Western city. All right.
Pool Enthusiast Monthly.
When you are ready, answers up. I have been to this city before. I can vouch there's a lot of pools there. Chris says San Diego. Karen says, ooh. Karen wrote Phoenix, crossed it out, started to write Scottsdale, I'm guessing, crossed it out, wrote Phoenix again. Karen, I'm so glad you trusted your gut. It is Phoenix.
Yes!
Phoenix, Arizona.
My first guess was San Diego, but I was like, but they're literally next to water. Literally next to the beach. So it can't be like a beachy town.
That's a great reasoning. Right. It makes a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Phoenix, mm-hmm. just very sure. hot, of course, and also
rich.
Yeah. And landlocked. Basically a third of the residents of Phoenix, Arizona own a pool. Right. Numbers 2, 3, and 4, however, are all in Florida, which is Miami, Tampa, Orlando. So yeah, maybe the being close to water, far from water. Yeah, all of those cities over 25% of the residents there, apparently. Again, according to Pool Magazine. All right, number two, what U.S. president ordered construction of the current White House swimming pool in the 1970s.
I didn't even know there was a...
There's a rich history of this swimming pool, in fact.
Do I go with the Joe blog? Okay, I
will. Against the advice of his advisors. His advisors all told him, please do not do this. But he did it. He went ahead and did it. All right. Answers up. Karen has written Carter, Jimmy Carter. Chris has written Nixon, Richard Nixon. Neither of you are correct.
Oh.
It was Ford dancing around. Ford. Yeah, Gerald Ford. Yes. Yeah. I did not know this until reading a little bit about Gerald Ford. He was an avid swimmer before becoming president. He would swim twice a day, apparently, like really early in the morning and again at the end of the day after work. It was just that, just for him, that was how he needed to kind of just keep himself mentally aligned and physically happy. So he moved into the White House. The White House did have an indoor swimming pool until Richard Nixon had it covered over because he didn't particularly.
Wow.
Yeah, there was an indoor swimming pool for many years. Nixon didn't like it at all, even though many of his predecessors, loved it. Kennedy, notably, others. So Nixon apparently had it covered over. They turned it into, just one of the, I believe, like the press office or something like that in the White House. And so Ford, he was mad that there was no swimming pool in the White House anymore. So he said, I need a swimming pool built. And his advisors are like, Jerry, you kind of.
You're not even supposed to be president.
You're all about like keeping everything on budget. But he put his foot down and so very, very pointedly made sure that the public knew there were no public funds used to build the pool. It was all done through. They solicited and got some private donations to finance building for his swimming pool. And of course, it would be not like he could take it with him, but it would stay at the White House for all future.
Is it still there?
It is still there. It's been, it's been remodeled and touched up. But yeah, it's still there. All right, quick one here. Last question. This is going to be an estimate closest to kind of last trivia question of the evening to solve tiebreaker kind of question. I have never swum in an Olympic-sized swimming pool. My wife has. An Olympic-sized pool is 50 meters long, 25 meters wide, and a minimum. It can fluctuate, but a minimum of 2 meters deep. How many gallons of water?
Oh, God.
Are there in an Olympic-sized swimming pool? And we're going to do closest to the mark here. 50 meters long, 25 meters wide, 2 meters deep. We'll see who's...
All right, hold on.
The numbers are swimming around above the people's heads
cubic
here.
Cubic meters...
I'm gonna. Tip me over and pour me out. How many gallons? If you want to give me liters, I'll do the conversion if it's easier for you. Okay. Chris has written.
I said 250,000 gallons.
Karen. Oh, Karen's got a diagram. This is so Karen. Like, Karen has actually.
So what I circled.
A visualization. Karen has written 225,000. Yeah, you're both off by, I mean, not an order of magnitude, but at least double here. The number that I have here in front of me says 660,000 gallons of water.
Oh.
660,000 gallons of water, a little bit over.
How many milk jugs is that?
Yeah, that's right. That would be, that would be 660,000 milk jugs, wouldn't it, Karen? Yeah. All right. Well, here's to being the least wrong and counting Ooh. Swimming pools and cooling off in the summer heat.
Woo!
Are you looking for a podcast that your whole family can enjoy that asks the deep philosophical questions like, do trees fart?
If you are, then you'll love Tumble, a science podcast for kids. I'm Lindsay.
And I'm Marshall. Join us as we explore stories of science discovery, from butts to animals, dinosaurs, astronomy, and everything in between.
You'll love these stories, and you'll learn something new.
Find and follow Tumble Science Podcast for Kids wherever you get your podcasts, or at sciencepodcastforkids.com.
All right, I have our last segment, and I'm actually happy that we're kind of bookending this episode this way, because Chris started with summer movie blockbusters.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out, not that he listens to the show, but one of my former coworkers, that time of the summer, every year, he's just like, all right, what's the official song of the summer?
What is this year's?
The Jam.
Billboard has their own official song of the summer with data.
Okay.
It's between this day and this day. This is the stream play. This is the radio play. And this is what's number one. So they take a data approach, and that's kind of more in the modern time. So can anyone guess what was Billboard when they first did official song of the summer based on Billboard chart data in 2010? Can anyone hazard a guess? It is by Katy Perry.
Oh, okay. Was it 2010? Was that the California Girl song?
Yes!
Okay.
Kind of cool. Even though they started that project in 2010, they started going back every year, looking at data within the constraints and be like, okay, this was the song, this was the song, this was the song. And it kind of dates pretty far back. And then it got me thinking, I was like, oh, I wonder what was an early song of the summer,
like Edison Cylinder song of the summer.
It's really hard to measure what is the song of the summer, because it really coincides with radio. Because there is a time where when you buy music, it's like sheet music,
right,
you know, there's no scheduling, oh, this is the summer time. It's not until like we have radio and kind of music sales that then you can say, okay, between this time and this time.
Yeah. Also the mass culture, like tying you all together, you
exactly.
know what I mean? Like trends and fads and yeah.
So I look back, there are a lot of contenders for what kind of was named, really early on song of the summer. So I'm just going to share, I'm going to play here a little bit. This is, Billy Murray performs in 1907, I'd rather two-step than waltz, Bill.
I'd rather two-step than waltz, Bill. I'd rather two-step than eat. Waltzing is fine, Bill, but not for mine, Bill. It isn't in it with a two-step a minute, for there's something about it that's grand, Bill.
B-O-N-O-B-O-S.
Hey.
It's so on the nose. It really sounds like something.
It's like Bioshock.
To parody. It's, yeah, authentic.
Yes, the song of the summer, 1907. That's what it sounds like.
Wow.
And what was the most recent song of the summer, do you think? This was just last year, 2022. What was the song of the summer according to Billboard?
What was last summer?
What time? As It Was by Harry Styles. I ran out of time for this, but I was like, wow, what if I mash up? I'm not a music producer nor a DJ, I was like, oh, maybe I can like really quickly learn how to like mash up songs. So I take this two-step than waltz bill with Harry Styles.
Yes.
It didn't work, guys. No. I tried.
It's like, how hard can it be to do this? Oh, I'll just real quick learn how to do it.
You know, I'll isolate the track. It just sounded like playing two things at the same time. You know, I'll tell you what, it did work. And this is our last quiz. What I'm going to do is I took some lyric snippets of what Billboard defined as the official song of the summer in the past couple of years, decades. I had a summer blockbuster movie trailer voice read out the lyrics. Thanks to AI. AI voice that sounds like the In a World, you know, that kind of like summer blockbuster movie trailer voice. Read out lyrics of some official songs of the summer. And then you guys buzz in and tell me, identify the song and the artist.
Okay. You're not going to give us a year or anything. We're just lyrics. Okay. Nope. All right. Song and art. Okay. All right.
Okay. So let's, let's play the first clip. And this would be summer1.mp3.
Seems like yesterday we used to rock the show. I laced the track, you locked the flow. So far from hanging on the block for dough. Notorious, they got to know that.
First of all, that's great. I love the voice.
Yeah.
Should we play again? Let's play it again.
Okay, so sure.
Seems like yesterday we used to rock the show. I laced the track, you locked the flow. So far from hanging on the block for dough. Notorious, they got to know that.
I mean, the Notorious, they got to know that. Notorious, is it Biggie? I mean, is it, so that'd be like
dig deep, 90s. Colin.
Colin, we're all counting on you.
Is that, I Love When You Call Me Big Papa?
So you are right that Notorious Biggie is related to this song, but there is a reason why.
Yeah.
If he is on the flow, who is on the track? I'll Be Missing You by Puff Daddy. Notorious B.I.G. passed away, and this is the song tribute to him, featuring Faith Evans, Notorious B.I.G.'s wife at the time, very famously sampling a clip from Every Breath You Take.
That's right.
By
That's
the Police.
Right. That's right.
All right. Of course, here we go.
Wow.
Next clip, Summer 2.
Why do birds suddenly appear every time you are near? Just like me, they long to be close to you.
That was a fast one.
That
Chris.
Was very good. The Carpenters, Close to You.
Chris being the stickler with parentheses. It is parentheses, they long to be, end parentheses, close to you.
Oh, nice.
By the
nice.
Carpenters, yes. Yes. Number 30. This is number 30. Greatest summer songs of all time. Next up, we got Summer 3.
Despacito, Quiero Respira, Tu Culo Despacito, Deja Quiti Diga Cosas Al Oido, Para Quiti Acuid Sino Estas Conmigo.
It's so serious.
I wish I knew the artist, but I don't.
I didn't choose a Spanish-speaking one, I'm sure.
AI is doing a great job. AI is doing a great job.
This is Luis Fonsi, Daddy Yankee.
Daddy Yankee. Oh,
and then
my gosh.
Featuring Justin Bieber.
Okay. Wow.
This is number five on all time list.
Like it has no idea what Spanish is at all. It's just yeah.
It's like me trying to just read. Read
phonetically.
Yeah, read Spanish. Yeah, phonetically. All right. Next one. Summer 4.
As a river flows gently to the sea, darling, so it goes. Some things were meant to be.
Oh, well, okay. UB40.
Yes!
Parentheses, I can't help. Close parentheses, falling in love with you. I don't know. Yeah. But it's the one that goes.
UB40's version.
Very specifically.
Right. Yeah, not the Elvis Presley version. Not.
I associate that song with like just like hotel pools now. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's like it's relatively inoffensive. It's kind of always playing in the background. Like
when I'm in my 20s, like, oh, this club is playing my jam. Like in my 30s, like, oh, this drive time radio station is playing my jam. In my 40s, like, oh, this hotel pool is playing my jam. You know, this Walgreens is playing my jam.
All right, time for the next one. Song number 5.
I got that devilish flow. Rock and roll, no halo. We party rock. Yeah, that's the crew that I'm reppin'. On the rise to the top, no lead in our zeppelin.
No lead.
The song title was in there.
Yeah, party rock. Right, that was was that LMFAO?
Yes. Party rocking. Yeah. Tonight. All right, and finally, before we play it, I just want to say not only was this the official song of the summer, it was Billboard's Song of the Year. Has won many awards, and I think it's sitting within the top 50 of the highest performing song of all time. So this is song number 6.
Since you've gone, I've been lost without a trace. I dream at night, I can only see your face. I look around, but it's you I can't replace. I feel so cold, and I long for your embrace. I keep crying, baby, baby, please.
Yes, please. Chris, please.
Every breath you take by the Police.
See what I did here? Okay. I bookended
what you did
with Puff Daddy. That song famously sampled the Police song, Every Breath You Take. Part of the reason for the popularity is because of the sampling kind of created more awareness for this older Police song. I mean, it was it already performed so well in its time, and then it kind of came back.
It charted again, right? I mean, yeah.
It charted again.
Yeah, Sting is like, please, yeah, sample my songs all you want. I'll take those extra royalty checks, yeah.
And that's our show. Thank you guys for joining me, and thank you guys, listeners, for listening in. Hope you learned stuff about Blockbusters, how to count the number of swimming pools in L.A., Lemonade, and Summer Jams. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and on all podcast apps. And on our website, goodjobbrain.com. This podcast is part of the Airwave Media Podcast Network. Visit airwavemedia.com to listen and subscribe to other shows like The History of Everything, Tumble, the science podcast for kids, and The Movies That Made Us. And we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
I'd rather two-step than waltz, Bill, sung by Billy Murray, Edison Records. I know a little lady by the name of Annabelle. She was quite a swell up in New Rochelle. She went to all the parties and the dances too as well. For she was leading lady and the belle of New Rochelle.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.